Strawberry Fields on West Springfield Avenue in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields has an in-store nutritionist, provides a wide assortment of natural foods, vitamins, and supplements, as well as a full deli, coffee bar, bulk herbs, fresh breads, and produce.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in this afternoon. On the program today, our monthly discussion about nutrition. This is a topic we usually take up on the first Monday of the month, but last week we were on a holiday schedule. But we didn't want a month to go by without having a registered dietitian here to take your calls about diet, nutrition, and exercise. Our guest this afternoon is registered dietitian Lisa Burgoon. She's sitting in today for Susan Kundrat. Lisa has worked as a registered dietitian in a variety of settings. She has 20 years' experience in the field of nutrition. She is currently the coordinator of the Sportwell Center at the University of Illinois, where she provides sports nutrition education and counseling to students at the U of I. She's also the co-author of a textbook on sports nutrition published in January of this year, the title Practical Applications in Sports Nutrition. Listeners, I invite your questions for our guest, Lisa Burgoon. You can join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Lisa, good afternoon. Thanks so much for coming in today.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm glad to be here.
You know, when the weather gets hot and humid, like it's getting there today, it's pretty sticky out there. I suspect people spend less time exercising outdoors. You feel like you just can't get motivated. So maybe you would have some suggestions for us. What can we do to get some exercise in into the day comfortably when it's hot and sticky?
Well, personally, I think getting out and exercising early in the day or in the evening time when the sun is not so high, that's going to be pretty important. As a sports dietitian, we certainly encourage our athletes to do that simply because they're going to be more comfortable. They're going to get a better workout, which to a lot of individuals, athlete or non, is means they're going to probably burn some more calories. They'll stay out a little bit longer if it's a little cooler. And that radiant heat from the sun is what's really going to make a difference and really make you uncomfortable. Certainly, the humidity can be high any time of the day, and humidity is an issue as well. So early in the day, probably before 8 o'clock in the morning is going to be best, at least before 9, and then probably waiting until the sun goes down. So 7:30 or so would be about the timing this time of year, in, at least in East Central Illinois. I think the other option can be exercising out of doors. The outdoor pools are open now, so you can get some good physical activity and exercise in the pools, and you can certainly try and do some of the various, you know, fitness center types of places that are around campus and around town that would offer air-conditioned exercise facilities.
I wonder if there are more mall walkers in, you know, when we're either very cold or we're in very warm conditions.
Right. I've talked some with the folks at Lincoln Square as well as up at Marketplace Mall, and they are very, very busy in the winter months. I honestly don't know that much about the summer months. I hadn't really thought about that before, but they do have a very active group in the winter months and if it's raining and that sort of thing as well.
Yeah. Now, what about diet in terms of this kind of weather when it's hot, humid? Are there things we can do to help keep ourselves comfortable through the hot spells? And, you know, maybe before and after exercising, what might we want to think about?
Right. I think a good piece of it is if you don't have to heat up your house, so things that are you can prepare, for example, again, cooking early in the day or later in the evening can make a difference as well in terms of how much your air conditioner has to be run as well as how comfortable it is. So, but preparing things ahead of time, like if you're going to make some pasta for dinner, then prepare an extra portion or an extra portion for your entire family and then use that with maybe leftover grilled chicken cut up that you can make a chicken pasta salad that you can then have for lunch the next day. Cooler items, more fresh fruits and vegetables, which are more plentiful right now, is always a good option. And I always am encouraging fruit and vegetable intake because I think it's so important for health. And I think the other piece can be then cool beverages that are maybe lower or non-caloric beverages, but different, maybe some tea that you prepare in the sun and then refresh it with some other types of a fresh fruit that you might freeze. So freezing berries can be a really good idea, or freezing other fruits and then pulling those out and eating those as a snack. So it's kind of like you're eating ice, but you're eating fruit. And again, it's a good way that dietitians can get people to eat more fruits as well.
Yeah. Well, we're supposed to get at least 4.5 cups a day. And on the one hand, it sounds like a lot, but when you break it down and when you know, it's not hard to do it at this time of year at all in terms of, especially in terms of fruit.
Right.
You know, a cup of watermelon is not a lot.
It really isn't. And generally, you want to get several cups of fruit a day. And you also want to remember you're getting to get the vegetables, too, because you get a little different nutrients and different fibers from vegetables than you do from fruits. And so those are also really, they're tasty this time of year, especially if you go to the local farmers markets, the local grocery stores that have good fresh options available. So they're very tasty. And if you just lightly steam them or even steam them in a microwave, which again, isn't going to heat up your house and not heat you up while you're standing over a stove, that can be good. The grill is a really good option too. Yes, it's hot standing in front of the grill, but you go back and forth. And so you can grill vegetables and along with, if you choose meat or other vegetarian type of entree, burger types of things, and you can grill your vegetables. So you're only turning on one heat source. And then you get that lightly grilled flavor with your vegetables too. It makes it a little more special.
Yeah. Well, also you mentioned pasta salad. You can have a lot of wonderful raw vegetables cut up and have that alongside carrot sticks, celery sticks.
Absolutely.
Cucumber.
Right.
Tomato.
Well, and even trying some different things. Like we got kohlrabi from the farmer's market this weekend. And it's like, oh, I haven't had one of those in probably 6 months. So, and that was kind of nice. So some different types of things that you can either have raw. Sugar snap peas are delicious raw and crunchy, flavorful, full of water. So it keeps you hydrated. Because I think that's a big piece of us being tired. Certainly the heat and humidity knocks us out a little bit. But if we're dehydrated during that time period too, people drag. They say by 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm exhausted. Well, you're probably also dehydrated. So getting fluids in on a regular basis through obviously drinking beverages that primarily are non caffeinated, because that can be a little dehydrating, but getting beverages in, but also getting, you mentioned watermelon. Well, that's probably 80-85% water. That's great because it keeps you very hydrated and can keep some of those fluids going. So anywhere from 60-70% of Americans probably walk around dehydrated every day.
Really?
So you really do need to push those fluids, and especially so in high heat and humidity.
Yeah. So how much water, say, for instance, should we, you know, be drinking? And I know water comes in other forms, for example, watermelon, or if you have a cup of tea, or you have iced tea or some other beverages, there's water in a lot of things. But in terms of just drinking plain water, what's the recommendation?
Well, there's some new recommendations from the Institute of Medicine, and the Institute of Medicine pretty much says go by your thirst for the average person, not during exercise. So you and I sitting here now, if we're thirsty, we need to get something to drink. And generally, people who are paying attention to their thirst, just like it's a whole other story when we talk about paying attention to hunger, but if we're paying attention to our thirst and we're drinking fluids when we're thirsty, we're going to stay pretty well hydrated. So that's a wide range of, you know, we used to say 6 to 8 ounce glasses of water per day for each person. Well, a 300-pound individual versus a 100-pound individual, there's less mass in that 100-pound individual. They may not need as much. We're pretty much throwing those recommendations out the door and saying, you know, drink based on your needs and your thirst, and then a whole new set of recommendations for fluids during, before, during, and after exercise to make, because we need additional hydration during that point.
Yeah. So if so many of us are dehydrated, we're not paying attention to our bodies.
Right.
So if we're not paying attention when we're thirsty, what is the situation when we're hungry or not hungry.
Yeah, there you go. This is what I talk about all the time with my weight management clients. If we eat when we are not hungry, we are going to consume calories that our body can't use at that time. So it's going to store it as fat, as a general rule. So if you're eating because you're bored, if you're eating because you're tired, if you're eating because you're cranky, if you're eating because somebody else is or because it smells good or all of these other types of reasons, your body really doesn't need it. And so it's the body's metabolism then says, hey, you're giving me food. I don't really know what to do with it. I maybe can, build a few blood cells over here, maybe build a little muscle mass over here. But now I've got this extra 400 calories that I really didn't ask for. I wasn't hungry. It's going to conserve it. Generally, it's going to conserve it as body fat because that's the easiest storage method. So if we're eating when we're not hungry, we're probably going to gain weight. And if we're not eating when we are hungry, our energy levels are going to go down. And that's what I find with clients that I work with is they say, well, I'm just exhausted by 2 or 3 in the afternoon. Well, you look at their dietary intake and they might be consuming maybe a small bowl of cereal with skim milk in the morning, which is great, nutritious and all of that. And then maybe, oops, I forgot lunch, or I just had a quick, granola bar and a diet soda. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, by 2 or 3 in the afternoon, if you go to work at 8 and you're working that whole time and you're busy, yeah, you're going to run out of energy and you're going to be tired. So getting in the energy when your body really needs it. So when it's physiologically hungry, if we feed that hunger, then your metabolism increases. And if your metabolism increases, not only is that good for calorie burning, but it's good for energy levels. It's the main thing I talk about with weight management clients as well as with athletes. Get the energy in when you need it, when your body's going to use it. And let's not eat as much typically late at night because, we're going to wind down. We're going to go to sleep. We don't need it then. Mm-hmm. We need it earlier in the day as a general rule.
Yeah. And also it seems that in the middle of the day, you want something that will keep you going. In the evening, maybe you want something that will slow you down a little bit.
Yeah.
What are some good things to have at lunchtime so that we don't, fall into that valley
right
1-2 o'clock in the afternoon?
Right. You probably need to make sure that you're getting carbohydrate and protein at lunch. A little bit lower in fat content if possible, because fat just slows you down just a little bit. It takes a little longer to digest and absorb, as does protein, but that could be a good thing. So generally I recommend for the lunchtime is let's get some carbohydrate in. Let's get some good carbohydrate through whole grains. If you're going to do a sandwich, maybe a whole grain bread with some sort of a meat or some other type of protein. Low in fat, use light mayonnaise or salad dressing types of things on your sandwiches. Let's put a piece of fruit in there so we get a good carbohydrate. I know everybody's worried about sugar, carbohydrates, but fresh fruit or even canned fruit, as long as it's packed in water or light syrup, can be really good and easy for people to consume. A little bit more carbohydrate, a little bit more fiber, keeps you fuller a little bit longer, but it doesn't slow you down so much. So carbohydrate burns very quickly, can get digested and absorbed within a couple of hours. The protein is kind of that intermediary. So that's what's going to carry you through until maybe 4 or 5 o'clock. And the fat can do that somewhat, but you just want to make sure you don't have too much fat in your diet, especially around the noon hour if you work a traditional 8-to-5 day, because that will just be a little bit more sluggish and might slow you down a little too much.
Okay, so a slice of whole grain bread or some kind of whole grain wrapper, maybe.
Sure.
Maybe lean meat like chicken.
Yep.
Maybe tuna fish.
Chicken, tuna fish, ham, even lean roast beef. If somebody really likes the red meat, they could probably have some of that.
Hard-cooked egg
certainly would be good. Or any of the vegetarian, types of sources. Maybe that's going to be a whole cup of black beans, maybe mixed with some rice left over from the night before, and throw a little cilantro or maybe even some picante sauce or something to give it some zip. And then maybe have a piece of fruit or something like that to go along on the side with with that, or a whole grain tortilla if you wanted to sort of mix it all up together. Yeah. That'd be perfect.
That's a great idea. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and we're talking about diet and nutrition this afternoon. It's a topic we usually take up on the first Monday of the month, but last week we were on a holiday schedule. We didn't want a whole month to go by without giving you, our listeners, a chance to talk with a registered dietitian. And our guest this afternoon is sitting in for Susan Kundrat. Our guest today is registered dietitian Lisa Burgoon. She's got 20 years' experience in the field. She's currently the coordinator of the Sportwell Center at the University of Illinois, where she provides sports nutrition education and counseling to students here at the University of Illinois. My name is Celeste Quinn, and listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon. If you've got a question or a comment, give us a call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. WILL. We've got some phone calls coming in now, so we're going to get these folks lined up and then we'll get right to them. Quick question in the meantime, okay, while we get these folks lined up. What do you think in the grocery store now of all the packaging that we're seeing, 100 calories? Is it a good thing in that it reminds us that just this much is 100 calories? Is it useful?
I think it, in some ways it can be very useful. I think what it does is it does give a visual. This is an amount that would be an appropriate snack if you just really aren't sure what you want, that sort of thing. The part for me is, I've consumed some of those just to sort of see what they tasted like. And it's they don't taste the same as the original of those particular types of products. For example, the chocolate chip cookies don't taste like that same brand of chocolate chip cookie because they've changed that formula
yeah,
to make it a little lower in fat and lower in calories. So if you really want a chocolate chip cookie, then I would say, see if you can't just portion yourself out just one and eat the real thing, because that's probably what you're looking for.
Yeah.
But for some people, it's very good. And I think even some of the diet entree types of things are really good for people trying to lose weight who have no concept of what a portion is. Well, you know what? There's a portion. Now, keep in mind, those are an entree and you want to add things to it. You want a vegetable. You want to put something out, maybe a glass of milk or something, to make it a meal. An entree is not a meal. So I think in some ways they can be good. In other ways, for me, I was disappointed that they just didn't taste like a smaller portion of the real thing.
Yeah. For me, it's worked out with the soft drinks. Because
yes,
it's, I don't need more than that.
Yes.
It's satisfying. It's sweet. And it's an occasional treat.
Yep.
So it works out really well.
Good. Okay. Good. Glad to hear that.
But you're right. The little Oreos chips in the bag are not an Oreo cookie. But they're pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk with some listeners. First, we're going to take a listener call from Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi, I just have a question. You mentioned fruit earlier, and you said fresh fruit or fruit in a can, but you didn't mention frozen fruit. I wonder if that still has the same nutritional value.
Yes, absolutely. Really, when you look at both fruits and vegetables, fresh, frozen, or canned are actually pretty consistent. Now, there's a few things that are different with the canned piece, because with canned fruit or vegetable, when they can them, they heat them, and that does break down some of the fiber, so you're not getting as much of the fiber from those products. With frozen and with fresh, you're essentially getting pretty much the same product, the same nutrients, the same fiber. And in some ways, I actually encourage, working with students on campus, I encourage students to consume frozen, because one, they won't spoil. Two, if you keep a whole bunch of fruit in your crisper and you don't get to it, you don't eat it, it's wasteful, whereas frozen, you know, it's still there. So yeah, from a nutrient standpoint, fresh, frozen, and in some ways canned, aside from the fiber, are all very nutritious.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome. Next, we talk with a listener on a cell phone on line two. Hi.
Hi. My question is about trans fats.
Uh-huh.
And I called my favorite fast food place to check what their oil was they used for frying, and they said it was a liquid vegetable shortening, and the ingredient was soybean oil. So is that a trans fat?
No. Trans fats are pretty much fats that have been altered in some way. So in some products, they could use soybean oil that they hydrogenated. You've probably heard the word hydrogenated fats. That's essentially what makes a trans fat. So if it's truly just soybean oil, you know, from the gallon into that fryer or whatever product that they're cooking with it, it's going to be trans fat free.
Very good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're very welcome. And next we talk with a listener in Urbana on line 3. Hello.
Hi. I was really glad to hear you talking about carbohydrates and fruits because my dad is on the Atkins diet and refuses to eat any fruit or any vegetable. And my question is this: how can I convince him that some of the carbohydrates from fruit and vegetable sources are actually good and necessary for him before he dies of a heart attack? And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Okay.
Well, you know, that's been the biggest challenge, I think, with sort of surge of low carbohydrate, high protein, high fat diets. I think the best way to try and convince is anytime you cut out an entire food category is when you're going to miss out on the nutrients that are provided in that food category. So if he's cutting out both fruits and vegetables, he's cutting out two of the five major food groups. And so that, from a nutrient standpoint, isn't going to be good. In some ways, that doesn't help with convincing. So I think the other piece is most people who are on the Atkins diet are trying to lose weight, and generally fresh fruits and vegetables, or the canned or the frozen, so long as they're not in extra syrups and sugars, are generally low in calories. And so I think from a low calorie standpoint, fruits and vegetables really work. You mentioned heart disease or a heart attack. So if I'm to assume that there's some cardiovascular disease risk, one of the great things about fruits and vegetables is there's so many phytochemicals in fruits and vegetables that probably are antioxidants and probably are very heart protective, particularly some of the reds and some of the purples. So, you know, if there's any way to kind of go at it from a health benefit standpoint, that would be good. And I think the other piece is generally they're low in calories. So long as you're not consuming a lot of fruit juices, but regular whole pieces of fruits are low in calories. And that's usually the focus of anybody on the Atkins diet, is to cut calories and lose weight.
Yeah. Also, the high protein, no carb diets are hard on other organs in the body, aren't they?
Well, you know, we worry about the kidneys and the liver with super high protein diets, although there's some pretty good research out there that suggests that in the healthy individual, and of course we don't know, you know, you would have to know that by going to your mm-hmm. doctor and finding out, but in healthy individuals, when they've done studies on higher protein, low or virtually no carb diets, they haven't really shown a lot of kidney or liver risks with those. Now, granted, those studies are not long term. If somebody stays on a super low carbohydrate and super high protein diet for years and years and years and years, I don't know if there's going to be some long-term effects. But in the short run, in healthy individuals, there hasn't been a whole lot proven. I hate to say that, but because I don't necessarily like people following the super high protein diets. But I do think that there's a way to moderate and maybe, you know, moderate away from a traditional Atkins type of diet to at least including some carbohydrates and including, you know, a protein is good, but not overdoing with protein, you know, and making sure, again, with Atkins, it oftentimes is higher in fat. And again, with cardiovascular disease mm-hmm. risk, you want to be careful with that, too. So, you know, it's really something to sort of weigh the pros and cons and the risks. And if a particular type of diet is producing weight loss, well, they're probably going to be healthier. And then eventually gradually adding some of those things back. Keep in mind, the brain only works on carbohydrates. So the brain can run on carbohydrate. And in the Atkins type of diet, they mentioned the ketone bodies, which is the breakdown byproducts of protein, and your brain can run on that. But its preferred and primary fuel is carbohydrate, and you need about 100 grams of carbohydrate a day in order to fuel that brain appropriately.
But it is important to also to say, choose your carbohydrates Wisely.
Well, yes, well. Wisely and well, yes. Yeah. And having whole grain breads or carbohydrate types of things, getting those fruits and vegetables in, which are going to give you carbs, even the dairy carbs, you know, with, say, yogurt and milk or soy milk, those are going to be helpful carbs that provide you with nutrients, and that's what we're looking for.
Okay. Let's talk with another listener, a caller in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I've been reading the diet, the labels, the nutrition labels. I read them religiously. And I have a couple of questions. One is, with the spray-on margarine, they tell you what it is for five sprays. Well, I've never put just five sprays on my piece of bread because that's like nothing. How can you find out what the fat content really is if you use, say, 20 sprays? And then for jam, I don't understand why there's no fiber when, like, it's seeded raspberry jam with pulp and with seeds, how that can be no fiber. And the other one is orange juice with most pulp also says it has no fiber, and that just doesn't make sense to me.
Okay. Let's take the first one first. The spray margarines, on the label, and this is a great question, on the label it says five sprays is the serving size probably.
Right.
And it probably says no grams of fat.
Right.
Okay. And could we just say if we use 20 sprays, 4 times 0 is 0? Well, I think that's a really good question. On food labels, it's required per serving to list the amount of fat that's in that particular product. And one would then assume you just multiply by the number of servings that you use. But on labels, you're required per serving to list the number of grams of fat in that serving.
Right.
Anything that's less than 0.5, they can list it as 0.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I still would say you're probably at 1 gram or less with those spray types of things. If you're using, say, 4 times that, 20 sprays, you're probably virtually fat-free. I don't think you can't be much more. You couldn't be more than, say, 2 grams of fat because it has to be at least 0.5 or less to be considered zero.
Or actually less than 0.5, I think.
Yes. So you couldn't be getting more than 2 grams total. Even if it was 0.4, you'd still be
right.
Less than 2. So I guess that's the only way I would figure it out from a math standpoint.
Okay.
As far as the jam and the fiber, you're right. There are there's fiber in seeds. There's fiber in the pulp and the raspberries or whatever strawberries there is. It's probably that the serving size just isn't big enough. So the serving size, if it's or 2 tablespoons, it's probably not enough to have at least a gram of fiber to put a gram of fiber on there. And that's probably the same with the pulp with the orange juice.
Well, it doesn't even say less than 1 gram, which it'll say on some things.
Yeah, that's the only thing I can guess would be that there just isn't enough of it. Think if you were going to take a tablespoon, maybe of raspberries, that might be 3 raspberries, so it probably doesn't have that much. And then they add a lot of sugar, so you don't even get 3 raspberries in a tablespoon anyway. That's the best I can think of with that one.
Okay. Well, still, even with, I can see that, but with a cup of orange juice with most pulp where it coagulates on your rim. And
yeah,
stuff,
exactly. Well, the other thing is an orange probably has only 1.5 grams of fiber per whole orange anyway. So it's just a little bit lower in fiber.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Sure.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. You know, the label is very helpful on the one hand, but yet it is so hard. You know, you try and do the right thing.
It is.
And it's kind of confusing, too, because a label might have something like vitamin C 0%. And you kind of think, why would they even put vitamin C? Why does it even appear on the label?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's because the regulatory agencies require certain things on the food label. And what they've done is they've required the things that are the most public health deficiencies or public health needs, if you will. So you'll see vitamin C and vitamin A, and you'll see the fat. And now we added trans fats in January of 2006 was when it was required. So there are certain things that are required on every food label. The layout of where it says nutrition facts on the label, mm-hmm. the serving size, not only is it required that they put these things on here, but they have to put them in the same order so that when you as a consumer are comparing two like products and looking at them, you don't have to look all around for the label.
Yeah.
So in a way, it's good because they've said, you know, we're committed to total calories, total fat, saturated fat, now trans fats, protein, carbohydrate, overall total fat, and vitamin A, vitamin C, calcium, and iron are the main ones that are required. And then you have to show them on that label. I mean, if you don't do that, you can't put your food on the
yeah.
product market. So that's why they go with the things that are, you know, the most necessary. Even the little nutrition facts labels on gums, I can't remember what the name of it is, but it's a abbreviated label that has to go on gums or mints or those little things. You can't fit all that stuff on
right.
there, but there's an abbreviated label requirement as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, I found a very interesting website today.
Mm-hmm.
It's called calorie-count. So it's www.calorie-count.com. And all kinds of interesting information here. And this is something I wish that, you know, it would be so handy to have some of this information at your hands in the grocery store.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Because you don't have to label, for example, you don't have to have a nutrition label on raspberries in the produce department.
Right.
That would be helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think pretty soon we are going to start to see the produce market, in some cases, you will see that because some of them are now packaged. And when you make it into a packaging, you have to put a nutrition facts label on it. There is a movement to start labeling fruits and the fresh types mm. of things that don't require labels, and meats as well. So as a general rule, meats are now pretty much all labeled.
Okay.
And they
I
didn't
bet there
to
is
be.
A label on raspberries then.
There may be.
Because they have to, they're so delicate, they have to come in a package. But
mm-hmm.
a watermelon or an apple
right.
doesn't carry a label.
Right. And generally, too, if it's just a package that they wrapped it to keep it airtight or
mm-hmm.
whatever, they may not have to put a label on that because they haven't done anything to that product. But the minute that you do something to that product, you know, then you follow the regulations.
Yeah.
But you're right. There's great information out there on the web, but who's going to go to the web and then find it at the grocery? I mean, it's just too time consuming.
Yeah,
so the
yeah.
food labels, you know, I think they do the best job that they can for comparison's sake, but then you probably have to do a little more investigation on your own depending on what your needs are and what your desires are
yeah,
for your
yeah.
overall nutrition.
Well, if wishes were horses, as my grandmother used to say, beggars would ride. But it would be, you know, if I could design a produce department, you know, I would put in a touch screen.
Yeah.
Or I would, you know, have a nutritionist come to the market once a month or something like that.
Right. Yeah. That's what's great about Susan Kundrat over at Strawberry Fields, I think, too, is just to be able to talk to somebody. We do some grocery store tours with our students sometimes, too, just to take them through, especially the students who are recently going from living in a dorm where the food is all prepared for them to, oh, my gosh, this is the first time I've ever had to even grocery shop, let alone cook for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And we do a lot of discussions with our students as well on the nutrition facts label. How do you read it? What does it mean? You know, how can you make mm-hmm. better choices of the same type of food, etc. So, yeah, I think getting that information is really, really helpful. How to get that information is and get it across, like you said, at point of purchase is really helpful. I'm pleased that at least most of the fast food restaurants now, the major ones, have nutrition facts information available right at the if you don't drive through, if you go up to the mm-hmm. to the counter, they have nutrition information right there at point of purchase, which is nice.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, I think it's really fascinating. In this website, you can all manner of information and more information than, you know, I don't know what I would do with all of this, but it's a useful tool. And I think because we're creatures of habit, it doesn't take a whole lot to maybe take what you're used to and say what would be a better choice and look at a couple of labels, and within a moderate amount of time, you've made an investment that really pays off.
Well, I think that's really that is a really great comment, because that's exactly what I try and teach my clients to do. Is, you know, that probably you're going to cycle the same or at least similar foods through every couple of weeks, if not every week. There will be a similar menu on your, at least for your evenings and maybe for your lunches and breakfast. And I think you're exactly right. If you can put out the time right at first and then just periodically do a check and say, oh, there's a new product here, maybe I'll try that one and I'll compare that. But you're absolutely right. You put the time in up front. And you get great benefits by then just purchasing those same products over and over, and then just watching the market for new things and then making comparisons. We do that all the time with breads, just trying to get, you know, the mm-hmm. whole grain thing. It's like everything says whole grain, but some right. of it looks like white bread, and I don't, you know. So with the new stuff, you kind of have to say, oh, okay, I'm looking for more fiber in my bread. Oh, but this bread actually is 110 calories per slice. When I was eating a bread that was only 70 calories per slice for only 1 gram of fiber less. So then you have to make comparisons. Do I want the extra 40 calories, or do I want the extra gram of fiber? Could I get my gram of fiber somewhere else? You know, so then, but once you do some of that, then all you're doing is trying to make comparisons with new products that you see out on the market. And that saves a significant amount of time. Time up front is time saved later.
What is the story on everything says whole grains and everything now says no trans fat? Like, suddenly it's a health product because it says no trans fat. We never had trans fat. You know what I'm saying? But anyway, back to the whole grain. I'm on a roll today. Back to the whole grain thing, you know, breads and pastry items that are labeled whole grain, but yet they look like that old stuff we've been told not to rely on so heavily.
Yeah, I was just doing a discussion with a group of women recently, and we talked about things like whole grain chocolate chip cookies and whole grain tortilla chips, and what's the difference? Well, there may be an extra gram of fiber, maybe even an extra 2 grams of fiber, but there's the same amount of fat. As a general rule, I can't say that across the board, but the products that I've looked at, approximately the same amount of fat, approximately the same amount of calories. And then what happens is we think, oh, whole grain, I'm supposed to be eating whole grain. And then you eat more of them thinking that they're good for you, but you ended up consuming more calories. So for people trying to manage their weight, that's not going to be a good option. For people who are doing okay with their weight, but just want to get a better product in, then that may be a good way to go, so long as you don't consume more of them. It's like the whole Snackwells thing of the 80s. Yeah. People would eat, you know, they would substitute Snackwells chocolate chip cookies for the real things, and they would eat a whole box for 1,100 calories instead of 250 or 300 of a regular cookie. So long as there isn't that, as long as it's substituting equally, then you might get some extra whole grain, some extra B vitamins, and some extra fiber in the same number of calories, so long as you're eating the same amount.
Mm. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Registered dietitian Lisa Burgoon is our guest this afternoon. And listeners, we've got about 8-9 minutes left in this portion of the program. So if you've got a question about diet, nutrition, exercise, give us a call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. We had a question earlier about trans fat, and there was another set of dietary guidelines released last month. This one from the American Heart Association, and it's been pointed out that overall, this set of guidelines is consistent with what we've heard over and over and over again in recent years. What's new, one of the notable things about this set of guidelines, the American Heart Association, first to put a number on how little trans fat one should eat. And I think theoretically the idea is to try and have none. But what do you think about this number that they've put on trans fat?
Well, I think it's great to have numbers. I think for so long we have heard the words consume less than 30% of your calories, your total calories from fat. Well, what the heck does that mean? I mean, everybody eats differently. How do you figure it out? Those types of things. And so giving an actual gram, generally 2 grams or less is what the recommendation is, or less than 1% of the total fat intake that you consume in a day. And so if you're looking at that, you really, my standard rule of thumb is you shoot for trans fat free. That's just your goal, is to not consume any trans fats. And I think they took, I don't know, I wasn't on that panel that decided this, but to me, I think they took this sort of let's give a gram amount, because we know that it's the trans fats that are probably the most dangerous, or what we learned is most dangerous in terms of developing heart disease, or developing higher cholesterol levels, which can lead to heart disease. And so they really took a strong stand, I feel, on the trans fat thing. And what you found already is, for example, Frito-Lay has all trans fat free products now. I mean, they can do it. They just needed a demand, and they needed to know that trans fats were also coming out on that label. So the American Heart Association, along with the FDA, you know, came up with these guidelines. And so they said, you know what, we're going to put that on the food label. And as soon as big manufacturers found that trans fats were going to come out on their labels, they're like, oh, we better figure out how to make them trans fat free, which they've done. So I think it's wonderful that the government has taken a stand, which has required, manufacturers to make a stand and change their products.
Let's take another call. Listener in Savoy on line one. Good afternoon.
Hi. I have a question about high fructose corn syrup. Because I started looking at labels, and I found it in all kinds of things. I couldn't believe. I don't believe I found a loaf of bread that didn't have it in. It's in practically all the crackers and cookies and salad dressings. It's in, what else? I found it in all kinds of things that I didn't expect. Stewed tomatoes, prepared foods, meats. Prepared meats, things like that. And so I decided to find out, well, what makes it so desirable? And I went and looked up an article. It was either in the Washington Post or the New York Times. And it said that it was, dissolves better, it's cheaper, things like that. But then it went and listed all these possible things that it could do to people, and it was a horrible list, starting out with diabetes. But it said, don't worry, just keep using it till we find out if it does this stuff. So I was wondering, just how safe is it? And I'll hang up while you answer that, okay?
Sure. High fructose corn syrup, yes, it's found in pretty much any product. And my understanding, which sounds consistent with the article that you read, is it's a pretty inexpensive source of sweetening. And so you will find it in a variety of products. Keep in mind that when the ingredient list on the label is listed, it's listed in amounts from highest to lowest. So a product that has high fructose corn syrup first, second, or third on the list, as you're reading the ingredients from start to finish, that's going to be a lot higher in sugar product than something that's listed way back at the end, maybe, you know, the 20th ingredient. So it's a matter of volume. And you also would want to look at the number of sugars that are listed on the label, because it'll list the number of grams of sugar. So that can help you gauge just how much sugar is in that product, which means just how much high fructose corn syrup might be in that product as well, because there's probably other sweeteners that are in a lot of products too that are going to certainly add to the sugar content. And that's where any type of sugary sweetener, whether it's high fructose corn syrup or just regular sugars or sugars from other products is where you're going to get the problem with some of the health conditions that you mentioned. And so if it's a high sugar product, it may be a higher calorie product. It can lead to weight gain. If it leads to weight gain, it could lead to diabetes, which could lead to cardiovascular. You know, I mean, there's just a whole slew of things that can happen related to that. And that's probably related to the high sugar consumption. And because so much sugar is in food products, just Americans are consuming more and more sugar every year. It's leading to our obesity problem and our diabetes problem as well.
Okay. And we're going to have to wrap up here now, Lisa, but let's talk about that label and where the sugars come in. They're under total carbohydrates. You know, you're going to have your fiber and your sugars listed.
Right.
Okay. So I've got two labels in front of me. One is for, this is for calories. This is the nutrition facts for one hard-cooked egg, sugars, 1.5 grams, okay, 1 cup raspberries, sugars, 5.4 grams. And I imagine you can go up from there.
Mm-hmm.
So what's low, what's medium, what's high when you see that gram number? Because what's a gram?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. As a general rule, I try and get people, if possible, and this is, you know, please take this with a grain of salt and compare your products, but 6 grams of sugar or less is probably kind of really what you want to shoot for if you can, especially if you have, you know, diabetes in the family or trying to watch, you know, your sugar intake or trying to watch your calories. Four grams of sugar is listed on the label is about a teaspoon of sugar. So your products that have about 4 grams of sugar, which that's, you know, pretty low still is a teaspoon of sugar. That's why that's the question earlier. That's why we have a little bit more problem with some of these, you know, diabetes and overweight, because there's sugar in a lot of products. So general rule of thumb is if you can shoot for around 6 grams of sugar is probably the high end. Now, that also would mean you could never have raspberry sorbet, which is a low-fat item that's nutritious and delightful to taste, all of those things. So you want to just sort of play that out a little bit and say, oh, well, I'm going to have something that's a little higher in sugar, but as a general rule, I'm going to try and watch what I'm doing, because you want to be able to enjoy your food. So that's why I say take it with a grain of salt. Take your sugar with a grain of salt. I'm not sure that's something a dietitian should say. But yeah, 6 grams or less is probably what we're looking for, not more than a teaspoon and a half in each food product.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot. Thanks
You're
for
welcome.
Coming in this afternoon. Lisa Burgoon, she is the coordinator of the Sport Well Center at the University of Illinois, where she provides sports nutrition education and counseling to students at the University of Illinois. She's also the co-author of a textbook on sports nutrition, Practical Applications in Sports Nutrition. This program, this monthly discussion about nutrition, usually we do it on the first Monday of the month. So we will shoot for the first Monday of August next month. And our thanks this afternoon to Lisa for sitting in today for Susan Kundrot.